Today's episode is brought to you by Fire Facilities. Make training count with their custom-made, all-steel live fire training facilities. Their made-in-the-USA towers and burn rooms are the best for preparing, responding, and surviving the challenges you face every day. Welcome back to 3-Point Firefighter. Today's guest is Mark Van Oppen. Now, Mark started in the California Fire Service in 1998. Now, he's recently retired, but he was assigned to the Suppression Division, where he held the rank of captain. He is a committee member for California State Fire Training and has contributed to the development of firefighter survival and rapid intervention curriculums. Mark has been published in the Fire Engineering Magazine, Fire Service Warrior. He is a creator of the Fire Service Leadership blog, Fully Involved, and he has been selected as a speaker at FDIC in 2015, 16, and 17, as well as Firehouse World 2015 and 16. He's the instructor for the Santa Clara County Joint Fire Academy. Now, he's also been an academy instructor at Evergreen Community College, a member of Nobody Gets Left Behind training group, and he's also been involved in public speaking since 2006. With that, Mark Van Oppen. Do you remember talking to me a couple years ago?
Nope.
You don't?
No. Did we do this a couple years ago?
We did this dance a couple years ago. So when I first got started, I was in the end of season one, which had been about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to you like I did before, and you said, absolutely, we'll do this. So we didn't nail down a date, I don't think. And then you called me way before the date, and you said, hey man, I can't do it this day. Can we put it off? I said, sure. So we did. Then you called me again and you said, hey, listen, you know, I'm writing up for the chief. We're short staffed. You know, I'll reach out to you again and we'll pick a date. Mm-hmm. And we never did. I never followed up on it, to be honest with you. I got lazy and I got to thinking about it. So a couple months ago, I started sending out invites for the 2024 year. And I was like, I got to revisit Mark. And of course, just like then, you were super nice. It was never anything other than, yeah, I'd be glad to do it. Let's just hammer out a date. Yeah. So I know how busy you get. But I do appreciate it, man. Thank you for being on.
No, thanks for having me. I'm glad you remembered, and I'm glad that it wasn't a case of me just completely forgetting like I sometimes do, as you know. So I'm glad you admitted that you were the one that forgot this time and didn't follow up, because generally that's me.
Yeah, no, that was totally me. I was overwhelmed with my first season of this. So, but my point in all that, you were very gracious with your time. We could make it work. Same this time. We were very gracious. You were very gracious with it. So I got to thank you for that. But I guess now you got a little bit more time because you're retired.
Yeah, I am. I retired in September, so I got a lot more time. So I'm trying to figure that out, trying to, you know, finesse what that looks like and figure out what that all means. So,
wow. So you're obviously very young to retire, like myself. I just retired. I'm only 13. I know I get it a lot. Right. But what have you noticed retiring so young? Are you pretty happy with the decision?
Yeah, I think I was actually, I'm up in Montana right now, helping my dad convalesce from a surgery he had last week. So it's been nice to be able to do things like that. And just talking to him about his career and when he arrived at the point that, you know, he was going to hang up his whistle for the last time. You just reach a point where you feel like you've done all that you can and you've contributed in the best way that you can. And it's just time to hang it up. You know, I don't have a whole lot of regrets if that's kind of what you're getting at. No, I'm very happy with my decision. I mean, I miss a lot of stuff about the job. Mm-hmm. I miss going on calls. I miss the guys. But there's something nice to the fact that, and I'm sure you understand too, that after I did it for almost 26 years, it's nice to have time to be able to do things and see things through to completion and that sort of thing and devote more time to things that you want to devote time to.
For me, I wasn't planning on retiring like when I did, but to put it nicely, I felt like my moral and ethical values of the fire service didn't align with my fire department anymore. So I was like, you know what? I just need to, I can, so go ahead and call it. And I wasn't really hitting for regrets. But I feel like people that retire early kind of got whooped, really, because I know so many people that retire at 60, 65, and on, and they just don't get to enjoy their retirement like, you know, the younger people, 50s, you know, get to enjoy it. So this was the soonest I could retire. So I retired right on my 20-year mark. I was only going to do another three anyway. But I have found, and tell me if this is the same for you or not, but I have found I'm just as busy. It's just doing other stuff now. Like I have, I mean, is that the same for you?
100%. And, you know, I think that you touched on a point that I was talking to Brian Brush when I let him know that I had retired. And I said that I felt, you know, cause I retired 2 years past my retirement date. I could have retired at 50 and I'm 52. I retired at 52. And, I felt like I was leaving when I still felt whole, both in, you know, well, in body, mind, and spirit. And so, you know, and as we were talking, he said, you know, congratulations, you know, that's the goal. That's what you want to get to. You want to leave feeling like you left everything on the table, but you want to leave whole. Mm-hmm. If I'm paraphrasing our conversation.
Sure.
But that's what you shoot for, right? I mean, you don't want to leave the game, you know, just a shell of who you once were. You want to leave and feel like you contributed in a positive manner to the growth and development of the people that you work with and the fire service as a whole. And then you want to have a healthy retirement and not leave busted. So, and that's how I feel. Yeah. So and again, there's a little bit of a identity crisis that you go through. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, but it doesn't last long. Like you said, you can find things to fill up your time. And I'm very, very lucky to have the avenue that I have to still feel like I'm contributing and doing the leadership stuff that I'm doing now that I've been doing for the last 10 years. And, you know, you're nice enough to have me on your show. So it makes you feel like you've still got something to say and you've still got, you know, something worthwhile to contribute.
Yeah. It's not like we're leaving the fire service. We're just leaving our department.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
Well, that's pretty cool. Now you brought it up, you know, national speaker, Mark Van Oppen, you think of fully involved. So I'm not sure how people like you and Coralie Moore, especially right now, Coralie Moore seems like he's in a different state every couple hours, how you divided your time to where you were working, family, and then, of course, your side hustle, which is so impactful on the fire service and has been for a long, long time. I don't know. I can't even imagine how you do that. I get to travel and teach a lot as well. I burn through my PTO, but my kids are older. They're moved out for the most part. But now that you're retired, what's going to change for you in fully involved in your traveling and your speaking engagements? Is it going to be a lot more, or are you enjoying that free time to where you're going to probably do less?
Well, it's kind of dependent upon, you know, which way the winds blow in terms of, you know, who wants to hear the message and if people still feel like it's salient. I mean, I'm perfectly willing to go out and speak to people and share ideas as much as people will have me. You know, my kids are grown up too. My son's in the Marine Corps and my daughter is in community college near us. And so, they're, you know, we're quasi empty nesters. So I'm still trying to figure it out. You know, we don't really know what it looks like, but, you know, the goal is to continue doing what, I've been doing, and really being, able to better focus on that. Get back to writing more. I've submitted a couple of articles to Fire Engineering, which I haven't been able to do in a couple of years because, like you said, there's too many things pulling at your time. You know, there's your family, your job, and, you know, then, like you were saying with me, it's fully involved, and you can't do all three well. And unfortunately, sometimes what suffers is family and that kind of thing, because the job and, you know, all the other stuff kind of tends to come to the fore. And I've been very lucky to have a wife who's been very supportive, and she ran the household while I was away a lot, you know, doing what I do, or what we do. And, you know, but in that, you know, I tried to be present when I needed to be in terms of making sure that, you know, when my kids were in high school, going to as many games as I could possibly go to, and you know, with my daughter's soccer and lacrosse and my son's football and track and that sort of thing. Unfortunately, COVID got in the way of some of that. They didn't have some, you know, some of their seasons were lost because of it. But, you know, I tried to be, it's hard to be everywhere all at once. And unfortunately, some of our marriages and some of our home lives suffer because we're trying to do something else. So, but luckily we've been able to get through it. And my focus now is to try to make up for a little bit of lost time.
Yeah. I know quite a few people that have struggled with balancing that, and that luckily none of that I know had it had a bad impact. It was basically just kind of realigning their priorities. I was blessed that I didn't start traveling and teaching till my kids, like I said, moved out. But I'm convinced my wife enjoys not having me around. So, and I know this because she'll tell you no. But then we'll be sitting in bed, reading, scrolling, whatever. And she'll just, after a couple of weeks of not traveling somewhere, a month, she'll go, "I'm sorry, when do you leave again?" I'm like, "Okay, you want to get me out of here. I get it. I get it."
Yeah, they don't mind having the bed to themselves. That's
Yep.
so it's one of the things that we've had to adjust to is my wife told me as we've kind of been working through some of this stuff is that ever since she's known me, I've been a firefighter and I've been gone minimum 10 days a month, sometimes a lot more because of staffing issues that we had in our department, and a lot of people have those the last couple of years of my career and the travel. I was sometimes I was only sleeping in my own bed at home 5 nights a month, if that. And so she's very independent. She's always been that way. And so now that I'm around all the time, she kind of feels like I'm hovering and breathing down her neck. So it's we're working through it, but it's almost like someone described it to me as almost like we're moving in for the first time together. So we're working through some stuff, but it's going okay.
That's
So
right. That's great. Well, let's jump into fully involved. I don't know that I've ever taught a class anywhere in the United States where I haven't seen at least one fully involved sticker on water bottles. So you've got a great reach. Your message gets out there. Where did you start? Where did fully involved like come to be?
The way the whole thing really started was, I always say that, the first thing I have to acknowledge is, we work with a lot of really great people, and seeing the drive and determination and the passion and the brothers and sisters that I worked with for my entire career, that's where a lot of the inspiration came from. But in terms of, where did it really came from? It came from me doing a lot of self-exploration and trying to figure out who I was and what I wanted to say as I was working towards becoming a company officer in my organization, going through the process of taking my first captain's test and failing, and not having success and having to work through that disappointment and frustration and study harder and trying to articulate who, what my voice was as a trying to be a young leader in my department, and then working through that, and then passing the second captain's test I took and coming in 7th out of 16. So, it's just that's kind of where it came from was knowing that I had some things inside me that were there, that I'd kind of always known and brought up to believe, but not really knowing how to say it. But then, through talks with my dad and some other people, that's kind of where the voice came from. But basically, where the blog came from was when I was a young firefighter and trying to find my way in my department, I was very frustrated and very vociferous about it. And one of my company officers told me that I needed to disappear and that I needed to shut up and just go study and mind my own business. And nobody wanted to hear what I had to say. And so that's where the blog came from, was going
Well, you
into,
proved him wrong. You proved him
well,
wrong
I,
big
you
time.
know, it, Well, it wasn't necessarily about that. His advice on one hand was actually very good because, within your own department, a lot of times, you do have to put your head down and just kind of do what's expected of you and not be a wave maker in order to get to where you want to go sometimes. And that's a pride swallowing, difficult road to take sometimes, but you have to do it if you want to achieve that goal. And that's what I did. And so my creative outlet for it, as I was just seething in my dorm room as I was studying, was I would go, we do our training, we do our truck checks, we do all the things that we needed to do. And then once we got done with that stuff, I would disappear into my dorm room for large portions of the day and study and write. And that's where the writing came from. And that's where a lot of the vitriolic stuff that I wrote early on when the blog first started, defiant or, I don't know. It was so long ago now, I don't remember the names of some of them, but that's where it came from. It's just needing some sort of an outlet to get it out, because I was extremely angry at the time, and felt like I had something to say, and really felt like, largely I was being ignored.
How old were you in the fire service? How many years did you have at that time when you were struggling with that, with a message and a voice?
Probably it probably went from between 5 and 10 years. So,
Oh, that's that
I
sweet
started,
spot, though, isn't it?
yeah, it's where the guys can go one way or the other, and I think that, sometimes you get kind of full of yourself at that point in your career, and you think that you know more than you do, and you think you're a little bit funnier, a little bit better looking than you actually are, and you think that you have like a lot to say, and I kind of fell into that trap, I think, and I think there is a way to voice your passions and stuff in a way that's palatable for people. And I had to find that, and it took me a long time to get there. And I didn't always get it right, for sure.
To me, and hearing what you're saying and talking to so many other firefighters that have their story's very similar. From that kind of adversity comes a message, a class, a conference, whatever, because they feel like they're not being heard one way or the other. I love the way you said it about, finding your voice. But it seems like, and tell me if I'm wrong, that you don't agree with how Mark Van Oppen did it back in the day. So blessed with the knowing what you know now, would you have done anything different back in the day, or would you kept on? I mean, I know what you're saying, I guess, but to me, it seems like your message is so strong. Your reach is so far wide. It feels like to me, as someone outside looking in, that you hit it on every mark you were supposed to. So would you really
Well, I
challenge that?
thank you, first of all. That's very nice. I don't know how much of that is actually true or not, but I think, I had this discussion, and my dad's sitting in the next room here, and I bounced so many ideas off him, and we were talking. I've said it a couple of times that, I wish, being, where I am at my age now, I wish I knew, was armed with all of this knowledge and experience, when I was in my 20s or my 30s. But then it takes all of the struggle and all of the stuff, all of that out of your 20s and 30s, and you arrive to where you are in this moment right now, as your aggregate of every experience you've ever had. So had I done it differently, I wouldn't be in this spot. I wouldn't be doing maybe any of the things that I'm doing right now. The only thing that, I sometimes, wished I'd been a little bit better at communicating things and not been so angry early on, that kind of stuff. But that's just stuff that you learn. You look back and say, man, I was pissed when I was in my 20s and 30s. But in order to make an omelet, you're gonna have to break some eggs, and that's just what happens, and that's life, and do I have any real regrets? No. Maybe could I have done things a little bit differently? Sure. But that I wouldn't be arriving at the same spot that I'm in right now. And I think that that's one of the things we have to give credit to people for, is how they evolve throughout their lives and throughout their careers, and not necessarily hold grudges against people for who they were when they were much younger and much more impulsive, and trying to find their niche in whatever vocation they're in, be it the fire service or whatever. Because you have to give people credit for evolution. And then sometimes I don't think we do that. Sometimes I think we punish people for something that they did when they were much younger and they were much different people. And we need to stop
Yes,
doing that.
I'm super guilty. I mean, if I look back, thank goodness there was no video cameras when I was early in the fire service, right? Because I
Right.
did and said some stupid stuff. I really did. But I guess if I had a regret is that I started late in my career. I've always been a fanboy. I've always Chief Forrest Reeder. I can hardly be around the guy, and he's a friend of mine now, but. I fanboy, like when some people get crazy about, sports stars or movie stars or whatever, That's awesome. I think it's great. But for me, when I go through an airport or I go to a conference and I see somebody that I recognize and I've heard them on TEDx or FireX talks, or I've seen them on other podcasts, I fanboy. I really do. Always been that way, but I didn't really get my voice, which, by the way, I'm stealing that. I love the way that you said that. I didn't really find my voice for about till about 6 or 7 years ago. So I was like 23 years in the fire service. It's not that I didn't have the passion, but I just felt like nobody wanted to hear what I had to say. I felt like there was nothing unique about me in my message that would play with anybody. And I've learned since then that not only is my message important, but everybody has got a message. It's not just me. It's really not even just you. It's like every firefighter has a story. They have a message. They have a voice. And it's just finding that to get it out. So, I mean, I think that's great that it hits you so early on. I've always said that the 5-year mark for me, from what I've experienced, has been the make or break for most firefighters. That's where you see firefighters either peel off and go to the couch or peel off and go out to the bay and start messing with stuff. And it's a tough road to hoe if you make the wrong decision. It's really hard to come back from that. Again, and it's been my experience in the fire service that people want to hold on to your mistakes and not your successes. You could be the save 1,000 babies, but you know, you trip, go down the stairs in the middle of the night for, you know, for the rest of your life, you're known as that guy. So, mm-hmm. You know, I had a great friend that I work with, and he was picked on a lot when he first came on, so much so I feel like he moved shifts because it was a little too much. But his big joke, and he'll say to me all the time, is like, ha ha, you stupid mother, your shoes are untied. You know, no matter what we're doing, he would say that to me, like that is important or something. But yeah, no, to your point there, though, is, you know, you can't judge people today by what they did yesterday. But at the same time, it seems like that's what we're doing all the time.
Well, people like to keep score, right? And when in terms of, you know, saving 1,000 babies, I've heard that analogy a different way. And that's why I was laughing when you said that you could save 1,000 babies and fall down the stairs one time and you're known as something else. But anyway.
You probably heard it more filthy, I'd say, if it was in the firehouse.
I did, yeah. Anyway. That's neither here nor there, but no, I think that there's a lot of people that I've heard it articulated this way. When you're doing something significant, the detractors don't matter. And no matter how inspirational you are to somebody, you're always going to be a joke and an embarrassment to somebody else. Right. So you got to think about it that way. I mean, a lot of people think about, or really like to bag on the big four at Excellence Is My Responsibility and just think of them as just nauseating hoyeristics. But if it resonates with you and it's something that you believe in and something that you aspire to and it works for you, then it works. Then we're moving the needle. But you know, you gotta understand that whenever you're trying to do something significant, there's always going to be people that are going to try to drag you down. Mm-hmm. And you just can't let them stop you. And it is tough, and you have to find that circle of people that you trust, that you can rely on, that you can go to and confide in and let them know how you're feeling. And then they pick you up, and because they're in the same boat, you know, so, you know, there's always going to be those people that are going to point out, you know, that you forgot to, you know, oh, do you remember when you did this? Yeah, I do. And this is what I learned from it. And I can't take, you know, I can't take credit for being at 5 years and being this person that was super, you know, motivated internally and stuff. There were a lot of people that contributed to that. There were people that pointed me in the right direction. There were people that I went and took classes from that inspired something in me and made me recognize weaknesses in myself. And their teaching style appealed to me, and I wanted to be like them. And that was kind of what got me into this whole thing, was, you know, A, being frustrated in my department, and then B, going outside and finding the right type of people and the right type of people within my organization that supported me and helped me get through that. And as painful as it was to be told to go to my room and shut up because I was never going to get promoted if I didn't, they were right. And I did it, and I did it for a year or a year and a half or whatever it was, and I got through it. It wasn't easy. And even then, even when I made the list, it wasn't easy because I'd said the wrong things to the wrong people sometimes because I spoke my mind. You know, just because I made the list, it wasn't a shoo-in that I was going to get promoted. So I was lucky to have some people that lobbied for me when I was on the list and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of people that pick you up and help you out along the way, you know, and so, you know, and even with the starting of the blog and the writing and things like that, people recognized something and heard something and what I was doing and gave me opportunities. And so we have to make sure that as we go along that we remember that helping people is not transactional. It's something that we do because that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to help the next generation come along. And people did it for me. And so now, you know, I've tried to do it for people too. People come up to me and they say, "Hey, I've got this article or whatever," and I'll read it and I'll move it along and say, "Hey, this person has a voice. This person's excited about whatever it is," and try to give them opportunities. And you don't expect thanks for it. It's just something that we're supposed to do because it's, again, it's not transactional. It's something that you know, as people that are in positions where we've achieved some measure of success, you know, new voices need to come in because sooner or later ours get stale. And so we have to help those people along.
Yeah, tell that to Salka and all them. I mean, they still are booking. Their message is so good as well that, I mean, they're still making all the book. I just saw that Salka was down in Pearland. He might even still be there now. But your message, let's go back to when you started the blog Fire Inside. Fire Inside. Sorry, Mark Alone.
Yeah, that's not me. Thanks. I'll see you.
Well, crap. Now I got to call Mark Alone, see if he'll get on here. No, fully involved. So what was your, when you started that, what was your singular message? What were you trying to scream to where everybody else was going to hear? Or was it multiple things?
It was a lot of things. I think there were a lot of, it was just, you know, me trying to fight that internal fight to be better and overcome some of the demons that I had. And I think it was just the overarching theme is, you know, nobody's going to bring it to you. Excellence is your responsibility and you have to fight for that. And you have to surround yourself with people that have higher self expectations than the organization has. And that was something that I posted just the other day because it's really true. Because the organization is never going to give you what you need. And you're going to have to find your own satisfaction within the organization and surround yourself with people to make the organization better and drive true change within the industry. You know, that's if that's what it eventually turns into. But, you know, start small, think big, and really, you know, it was all about self-improvement. And a lot of what I tell people all the time, a lot of the stuff that I talk about on the blog or on Facebook, it's not me preaching to people and telling people how they should be. It's me trying to keep, you know, myself in check and reminding myself of these things and those thought bubbles that I post daily now. That's exactly what those are. It's me going, "Hey, remember this. Hey, this is how you should treat people. Hey, this is how you stay on track." It's daily pep talks I have with myself. So
There's
that's
no
kind
more
of.
bigger accountability than putting your message out there for the world to see. It keeps you in check, you know, because once you do that, you're held to the same the standard that you've been talking about. At least that's the way I feel, is like by putting stuff out there, you know, you can't the my podcast is built on you know, pride, training, and physical fitness, the three points for an article that I wrote. And if I slack off on any one of those, I'm going to hear about it. Right. So I can empathize with what you're saying, is that it's sort of an accountability model as well. And if people get something from it, great. But I mean, and people definitely are. So it, was it when it comes to your transition from, you know, just working at Palo Alto, I don't mean just, I apologize, from working at Palo Alto to that and fully involved, how well were you received in your own department? Because I've heard from many people that once they start making a name for themselves out, they're part of the national conversation, that everything they do is through a microscope now in their own department. People are dying to catch them screwing up a little bit. Was that anything that you experienced?
I don't. I think it's inevitable, right? I think that again, it goes back to the part of the conversation where we always want to see people that, you know, we always want to see people fall for whatever reason, and I'm not sure why. There was some of that. I think there was a little bit of, you know, who does this guy think he is? And that's why I always say it doesn't matter who people think you are if you know who you are. right? I mean, that's a lot of, right? But, yeah, it's, there are people who understood, who I am and who I tried to be, and they got it. And, but the people that don't want to hear the message are never going to hear the message, and they're not going to believe in it, and they've got their minds made up. And sometimes it's right, sometimes it's driven by jealousies and things like that. But, I think one of the things that was difficult for me was when I first started writing and started doing things, I had my first article published in Fire Engineering, and I had a deputy chief who was a captain of mine for a while, a guy who I really looked up to and admired in some ways, and wanted to be like, and you guys are going to cry. But I had my first article published in Fire Engineering, and I was really proud about it. And the thing that I was proud most about was the fact that the first line of my bio said Mark von Opp is a firefighter for the Palo Alto Fire Department.
All right, that's part one. I hope you enjoyed it. I loved it, and look forward to part two because it is amazing. Check it out next Monday. Today's podcast was sponsored by Fire Facilities, industry-leading designers and manufacturers of realistic, built-to-last training structures for more than 30 years. Make your training count. Visit firefacilities.com for more information.